Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. When today's guest, Lorenzo Cooper, was just 11 years old, his parents, who were addicted to drugs, neglected him for 3 weeks. He was left with just one outfit for school. He knew he would not be socially accepted with just one outfit. He washed it every single day, and he says he remembers it vividly. Like so many boys, he was struggling. And then he met Ashanti Branch, a teacher who started an organization called the Ever Forward Club. It's a group that tackles the issues of masculinity through mentoring and workshops, providing safe places to look behind the masks we all wear on a daily basis. The Ever Forward Club is featured in the documentary The Mask You Live In, which follows boys and young men as they struggle to stay true to themselves while dealing with society's narrow definition of masculinity. Here's a clip of boys and young men sharing what's behind their mask.
If you really knew me, you would know I feel like an outsider at school.
When I'm having a bad day, sometimes it's hard to talk to somebody about it.
If you really knew me, you would know that when I'm sad, I really don't say anything about it.
I used to hide emotions. Like, when I'm sad, I wouldn't tell anybody. And when I'm mad, I wouldn't tell.
For a long time, I didn't have any friends, so I didn't have anyone to talk to.
We don't really talk about feelings or nothing in our house.
If you really knew me, you know that sometimes I feel like I can't be myself.
If you really knew me, you would know that I don't really know my dad.
If you really knew me, you would know that my dad, he's in jail, and I don't think I ever seen him out of jail.
Around fifth grade, my mother passed away. Most people don't know that about me.
If you really knew me, you would know that my mom and dad fought over me.
My parents went through a little phase where they told us they were going to get it.
That is a clip from the documentary, The Mask You Live In. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about how to take the mask off of masculinity. Lorenzo Cooper joined the Ever Forward Club when he was a ninth grader at San Lorenzo High, and he has since graduated from high school, and he's studying at Chabot. He's also a program officer for the Ever Forward Club, and Lorenzo joins me in studio. Hi, Lorenzo.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to the show. It's great to have you. What was going through your mind when you heard those clips?
Well, I know one of the students in the clip, so every time I hear it, it's kind of like, not necessarily hurts my heart, but it just makes me more motivated to keep doing what we do, because I know him personally.
Which clip was it?
The one where the student said, my dad is in jail, and I don't think I've ever seen my dad out of jail.
Wow.
That's a student that we deal with for years. He's actually related to Branch.
And how is he doing?
He's doing well. He's going to school in Berkeley, and he's doing pretty well.
I was watching clips of your story this morning. Really amazing. What is it like for you? This is kind of new for you to publicly tell your story. You were on stage with Ashanti Branch last year, and now you're on the radio telling your story. What's that like? Been like for you?
It's been kind of bittersweet because, like, I'm kind of like past those moments in my life. They kind of shaped me into who I am today. But then it's also kind of weird for me because when I had the conversation with my father about that moment in my life, he doesn't remember it. So I don't know if that's like him trying to just put it down and not like bring it up or talk about it, because that was a time where he probably isn't too proud of, or he just probably doesn't really remember. But it's hard for me to talk about my truth and not step on anybody's toes, if that makes sense.
And so talk a little bit about this. When you were 11 years old, your parents were addicted to drugs, mm-hmm. and they neglected you for 3 weeks?
Well, the situation was my mother was heavily addicted to drugs, and my father was just recently recovering. So he has 7 kids with 5 different baby mothers. And that's like where kind of like the issue came in, is that he had a lot on his plate because one of my youngest siblings, Robin, his mother had three kids as well. So he was taking care of his seven kids as well as those three kids. So it was the total of 10 kids. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to really hold a grudge against him because I knew everything that he was dealing with, but it still made me feel some type of way having to deal with that, you know? Mm-hmm. Because when I walked outside, people knew that I had the same outfit on the day before, you know, and kids are ruthless, especially in regards to, like, talking about each other. So yeah. How I grew up, if you didn't have any Jordans on, which is kind of how it is now, people would rag on you pretty hard. So I learned to defend myself. I learned how to deal with those things. But the way I dealt with it was just stuffing it down, just not talking about it. Got into a few fights over it, but once you go home, it's like, oh, no one's talking about it anymore, so I don't have to talk about it and we don't have to deal with it.
And again, we're talking about when you were 11 and you had one outfit to wear every day for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And you washed it every day at home.
Yeah. Just because I wasn't going to be dirty.
Right. You know, we talk about, there's so many problems. Something like not having enough clothing to wear to school doesn't really get talked about often, and it's a huge problem, right?
Yeah, definitely, because what happens is, what I feel like happens in America is that, like, it's all about the next hottest thing. So even if you can't afford clothes, if it isn't, like, quote-unquote, the next hottest thing, you're still going to probably feel insecure about what you're wearing because of the way other kids make you feel when you go to school. So it may not be an issue when you get home because, like, oh, I get food, I have clothes, I'm okay. But then when you go to the outside world and you're dealing with youth who have parents who are more affluent, who can take them on trips to Disneyland, things that I didn't necessarily get the chance to experience, like, they make fun of you because of it. So it makes you question the people who care about you.
Before the show, we were talking about masculinity and how society is really letting down a generation of young people, especially poor people, people of color, people who are struggling. And you said something really interesting, that it's not just one generation, it's actually two generations.
Right. Because I think my generation was the spawn of basically a generation who was introduced to the drug epidemic. So, like, my mother was born in the 70s, and, like, drugs hit really hard in the 80s. So that was right around the time she was a teenager. She had me at 21 when she was still dealing with a drug addiction. And my father, he sold drugs at the moment. He sold drugs, and then he then got on drugs later. So that entire generation gave birth to this generation, who's now, like, young people giving kids to more young people, and they don't necessarily have the tools to raise these kids to be, like, productive members of society.
Hmm. Do you talk about that with the other members of the group, about the drug epidemic and the result of the drug epidemic and, the like you said, your parents, parents who were addicted to drugs and then had children?
I've talked to my young men in our meetings about it, but sometimes it kind of gets clouded because there's a lot of things that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And I try not to put all of my stuff on them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because the things that I deal with, I have a different group of men that I meet with on a different time to deal with my issues. Because when we're there, we're simply serving the youth, and we're talking about everything that they're dealing with and everything they experience when they go to school.
And so talk a little bit about, before we talk about your time with the group today, how did you, when you were 11 years old and really struggling with neglect and having one outfit and dealing with potential fights at school, and then, of course, we all wear this mask, mm-hmm. so hard as an 11-year-old boy, how did you find Ashanti?
Well,
Ashanti Branch.
Just to clarify, I didn't go to school when I had one outfit. Like, I was mortified.
So, you didn't go to school?
No. I did leave the house, of course. So, like, it was people in my neighborhood who was, like, talking to me badly. So I told myself, like, there's no way I could go to school looking like this. It's too many people there. So my mother, she wasn't necessarily that involved because she was struggling with her drug addiction. So it didn't really matter to her whether or not I went to school or not. So that was one thing that.
So you left the house. What did you do for the day?
Well, I used to go to the library because those were like computers. Like, just I got good internet, and I used to go on this little website called Miniclip, play games, and I didn't do much reading until I got into high school and I started like living with Branch. So that was when I did a lot of my reading, but I went to the library all the time. So I was always around books.
How long did you stay away from school?
Probably about a week after. My cousin Terrence, he brought me like a bag full of clothes that were too big for him because he was like 2 or 3 years older than me. So he was like a little taller. So all of the clothes that he couldn't fit anymore, he gave them to me, and then I was like kind of fresh, you know. So
at that time, did your teachers ask you where you've been, what's been happening with you?
Well, yeah, but we had like a really strict code of silence. So like, you can't talk about what happens inside of your home. Like, if you talk about what happens inside of your home, you can get in trouble.
At school?
Yeah. So like, one time, my mother doesn't remember this because I never told her about it, but my counselor, I was just talking to my counselor about something that happened. I don't even really remember what happened, but she didn't tell me. So they pulled me out of class, and CPS was in the cafeteria, and we had like a private meeting. So because I was like kind of smart and I knew like what happens with CPS, I was 11 at the time.
Child Protective Services.
Right. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, who are you guys? You know, kind of skeptical. And they just started asking me questions about like my home situation. So I was just telling them like, oh, it's good. Everything's great. I eat every day. I got clothes. Like, there's no problems at my house. Like, because I knew if there was a certain level of neglect that my mama could go to jail. Mm. And I would never wish that on my mom, no matter how, like, she's made her mistakes in the past, but I've never held any type of grudge against my mother. I've always still loved her with all my heart, and she's always been like, how do I explain this? Like, that's the person who I kind of do everything for, because I feel like if she sees me being successful, that will make her want to try and get her life together.
How is your mom doing today?
Today, she still kind of struggles with drug addiction and homelessness. Like, she lives with one of my cousins, and she has this boyfriend who's kind of like stalking her, but the process to get a restraining order is kind of difficult. You kind of got to go to court, get approved by a judge that a temporary restraining order is in place, and then you have to get that person served. So they both are homeless. So it's not like we can go to his house and serve him. It's like it's a different situation where we have to actually like find him on the streets and like physically give him the paper.
Wow.
So, and it's difficult because she's really afraid of him. So she's fighting to like stay off of drugs. So she sometimes goes to NA meetings. She's consistently been going to get methadone shots. So she's trying to get to break her drug addiction, but it's difficult when she has someone who's like always on her back, always like looking for her. There have been times where I went to go drop her off at the clinic, or I went to take her to the clinic, and he's outside waiting for her. So we've had situations where me and him have almost gotten to physical altercations because I can see the fear that he puts into my mother. So I just have to remember that I'm more socially intelligent than he is, and that I'm not in the same position as he is. So I have to be more cautious of like how I like make my decisions, because I could easily like resort to what I was taught when I was younger and like try and like fight him or something. But that doesn't benefit me. That doesn't benefit my mother. And that probably would benefit him, because I don't know him. He might get a kick out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'd rather not even.
What does your mom think of the work you're doing with the organization?
She loves it. She's like, she's so proud. I'm her baby. Oh, I'm so proud of you. But when we are together, I don't really talk about the work that I do, because I'm more talking to her about how we could like fix her situation, because I just had a child myself, and I really want my child to have a stable grandmother in her life.
You said earlier that you were not allowed to talk about your home life at school. When I watched videos of members of the Ever Forward Club, and again, this is a club that tackles the issue of masculinity through mentoring programs and then workshops, that ask young boys and men, basically there's a piece of paper with a mask on it, and on the mask side you write in what you look like, who you are you during your everyday life when you walk around, maybe happy, maybe tough. And then you turn over the mask and you write about who you really are when you take off that mask. And the one thing that really struck me watching the videos of the young men who are part of the Ever Forward Club is that they're not talking about these issues in school. And so can you elaborate on that a little bit? It seems like this is something that you would really want to talk about in school.
I went to a conference for the Ever Forward Club a while back in Columbus, Ohio, called Knowledge Works Conference. And they were like basically trying to come up with different ways to like change the school system that it would be more beneficial to the youth. And that was the one thing that I advocated for, is that social emotional learning should be a required course. Mm-hmm. Because when I was young, and what I've noticed in the youth that I mentor, is that when you're dealing with a lot of emotional baggage, it's hard for you to focus on what it is to be successful, on like trying to do good in school, especially when you have somebody at home who probably didn't graduate or didn't even go to college or hardly even talks about college. It's hard to believe as a young man that I am supposed to go to college when all of my heroes and my idols rap about selling drugs, rap about doing drugs, and my parents aren't necessarily going to college or stressing to me that college is important. So it's like, why even try?
What kind of response did you get
from
when you went to this conference?
A lot of people, they all thought it was a good idea, but they wasn't on the forefront saying like, wow, that's like something we definitely need to do. They were more focused on trying to teach students about economics, which, don't get me wrong, like, I think economics is really important, and it's something that they don't really teach that much. Like, they teach a little bit of economics in school, but like there are different things that they don't teach. Like, they don't teach you how to file your taxes in high school, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, that's what I think is something that they should be teaching. They don't teach like young men how to pay rent on a monthly basis. So like, when some people have parents that when they turn 18, they're literally going to be out of the house. And when you graduate high school, your economics class didn't teach you how to apply for low income housing. It didn't teach you how to like accumulate wealth. It just taught you that if you got it, this is what you do with it, you know? And sometimes that message can get construed.
Today we're joined by Lorenzo Cooper, who is a program officer for the Ever Forward Club. This is an organization that encourages boys and men to look behind the masks we wear on a daily basis. Actually, they now also work with girls, right?
No, we started
a few girls?
We started off working with girls. So like when the organization first started in 2004, well, the very first meeting had about 7 young men in there, and they were students that Ashanti Branch, he had them in his class. So after they started coming more and more, we had young women and young men all in the same place. But that was before Ashanti knew that he was building a nonprofit organization. He just knew he was providing a place for young people to be and to talk about being successful. That was before the Taking Off the Mask workshop. That was before a lot of things. Now, we focus primarily on young men, because young women have a few different needs than young men do.
Right.
And Branch isn't equipped to serve those needs, and we just don't have the capacity to hire a woman who could basically fulfill those needs for young women. But we are going to be there soon.
Yeah. it's incredible. What the group does is it provides safe places to look behind the masks we wear on a daily basis through mentoring and workshops. And Lorenzo works now with the organization. He also graduated from high school, and he's studying at Chabot. And he tells his story in videos about when he was just 11 years old, his parents, who were addicted to drugs, his mom was addicted, his dad was in recovery, neglected him for 3 weeks, and he was left with just one outfit for school. Knew he wouldn't be socially accepted, so he didn't go to school until he actually got clothes from a cousin, right? If you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. If you're an educator, what are your thoughts about what Lorenzo is saying about what he thinks should be brought into the classroom to provide a space for young boys, especially, to talk about the struggles that they're dealing at home and with family. And then the larger question about masculinity. What are your thoughts on how it's defined and portrayed? What are your thoughts about how society should tackle masculinity? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website or Facebook page. Let's talk a little bit about masculinity and this mask workshop that you all take part in. How has your opinion of masculinity changed since being involved with the Ever Forward Club?
Well, the first time I think my idea of masculinity changed is when I went on a college tour for the first time and we went to the beach, and like, that was like the first time I ever cried in front of somebody. And like, I was able to get a hug from a man. And like, it was weird because when I first got involved with the Ever Forward Club, like, my friends used to make fun of me and used to call me like homosexual and like, you know, more vulgar terms because I was spending a lot of time with Branch. And
you say it Branch, Ashanti. Branch, yeah. Who started the group.
I'm sorry. I call him Branch
because I've
known him almost 12 years. So it's like, when I first met him, he was a teacher. And then on some of the men's teams that we're on, they call you by your last name. So I'm always calling them Branch. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But so that first encounter where like I realized that Ashanti Branch was somebody who actually cared for me, it was when we were at the beach and I was crying. And he gave me a hug and he told me he loved me. And I was like, oh, that's a first, you know. So that was like when I realized, like, you don't necessarily have to be so hard all the time. You don't necessarily have to always want to talk about being the toughest or like the most thugged out guy. And at that time, that's what I was like really focusing on, because everybody around me was like trying to be a thug.
How old were you then?
I was probably about 13.
And that was the first time that you were taken to a college.
Yeah.
And what was that experience like?
It was weird. Because, like, I went to Brookford Elementary, which kind of looks like a prison. Then I went to Madison, which also kind of looks like a prison. And then when I went to Edendale, it was a little bit different, but the structure was still the same. So when I got to college, I was like, wait, you're telling me people pay to come here? Like, there has to be something about this school if people are paying to come, you know? And then we went to their like cafeteria and saw like the type of food they get to eat. I'm like, what? We're eating this cardboard pizza and they got like a whole salad bar? Like, no way, I gotta go to college. That was like, wow. Right then and there, I'm like, I gotta go to college. I'm like, then me being a young man, you know, I'm like, look at all these ladies. Like, oh my gosh. Like, wait, like, there's like 1,000 more women here than it is in high school. Like, let me go to college, you know? That's what really like made me start thinking about a higher education.
Hmm. When you say that your schools felt and looked like prisons, mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on that?
Like, so I have a few family members who are incarcerated and I've been to a jail and I see what it looks like. So like, if you're familiar with Brookford Elementary School, it's like it's a big building, but it's not two stories. It looked like it can be two stories, but it isn't. And it just has like windows. It's hard to explain. Like, it looked like when you go in and you just see like kind of like the hallways, it seems as if you're walking into a holding like cell in a prison. It's like there isn't, they haven't painted it in probably like the past 20 years since I've been at the school, and like they haven't upgraded the play structures or anything like that. It looks like a blacktop for a prison scene in a TV show that I watch. So like, I kind of just get that idea from it.
So this was elementary school and high school?
Elementary and middle school.
Is this something that you talk about with your friends?
With my friends?
Just like the feel of the school?
Oh, yeah. Me and my friends, we joke about school being kind of like jail all the time. Like, they make you stand in a single file line. They make you sit in your chair for like several hours of the day. And like, as a young man who has like so much testosterone and so much energy, it's hard for you to sit in one place with your legs crossed and your like hands like this. It's like, I want to move around. around. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's kind of like they're teaching you to be, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, basically just, they're teaching you how to take orders. Mm-hmm. They're not teaching you how to use your imagination to, like, build something or to, like, create something, like, you know?
I hope we get some educators and teachers to call in about this. Before we go to break, you mentioned the beach trip. After you all went to the college, you went to the beach, and Ashanti said, this is your time to just relax.
And reflect.
What happened at that point?
He didn't want any of us sitting with each other. So he wanted us all to be by ourselves. And Ashanti Branch is such a hard worker. And this is, it's really, sometimes painful to watch, because, I could see him falling asleep at 2 o'clock in the morning, at his computer. So this happens, all the time. So he came and talked to me. I wasn't the first person he came and talked to. It was about probably 15 of us on that specific trip. He went and talked to everybody. And I don't know what those conversations consisted of, but I know if they had anything to do with, similar situations that we talked about when he came and talked to me, is how do you have the capacity, you know? It's 15 students who you know are dealing with stuff, mm-hmm. and you come and talk to each and every one of them individually, and they all connect with you around this area. It's it was beautiful. It was oh my God, this is something that I would aspire to be like.
And then the beach added to it.
Yeah. So when you're just sitting there, it's kind of hard not to go into deep thought when it's kind of hard to not go into deep thought. When you're sitting there, it's about 8 o'clock at night and the waves are just crashing up against the sand, and it's like you're looking at the stars, and the way he kind of sets the scene up, it's like, this is your time, you know? Like, you need this time to relax, to let loose some of that negative tension you have on you. And it was like, when you set the scene up and put it into that context, it's hard for you not to go to that place when you're in such a relaxing state.
Lorenzo Cooper is a program officer with the Ever Forward Club. This group tackles the issue of masculinity through mentoring and workshops, providing safe places to look behind the masks we all wear on a daily basis. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing media coverage of Donald Trump's sweeping tax cuts, the Republican Party's plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, and we'll also ask our guests about calls for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to step down. That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation with Lorenzo Cooper, we'd love to hear from you. Lorenzo is a program manager with the group The Ever Forward Club. This group tackles the issue of masculinity through mentoring and workshops, providing safe spaces to look behind the masks we all wear on a daily basis. And Lorenzo found the group when he was in school and had a lot of struggles. When he was just 11, his mom was a drug addict, his dad was in recovery, and they neglected him for 3 weeks, and he was left with just one outfit for school, knew he wouldn't be socially accepted, so decided not to go to school. And then he met Ashanti Branch, who is he started the Ever Forward Club, which tackles the issue of masculinity. So if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments about this issue of really teaching boys, giving them the safety and the space to take off that mask that we all wear on a regular basis. We'd love to hear from you. How do you deal with these issues in school? If you're a teacher or a mentor, give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website or social media page. And let's hear from Debbie in San Mateo. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Oh, good. I just want to say I think Lorenzo is so incredibly smart. And I'm a college recruiter, and I go to high schools a lot. And just what he has to say, I completely agree with him on education. There are so many things that are neglected. But I will be in a classroom, and we do presentations on life skills. And I'll ask kids, like, how would you buy a car if you didn't have the money? And no one would know a loan. So to his cause, like, it's in all levels. And I go to all levels of high school. And it is sad. I would love for a group like this to reach out to, like, the Bill Gates Foundation, because I think those people are really the ones who are going to change education. And listening to you speak, you are so incredibly smart that a group like yours can completely change the face, I think, of education. He's a very impressive young man.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. We reach out to a lot of organizations in regards to, like, trying to get help, because for the past 12 years, Ashanti Branch has been doing this completely by himself. And that's why I kind of felt like such a calling to me to, like, kind of support him, because I was working at In-N-Out Burger for 6 years. Sorry, I had to take a deep breath on that. But I was working at In-N-Out Burger for 6 years, and it was never really fulfilling to me. I didn't feel like I was getting anything from it. It was just like same thing over and over and over again. And Ashanti, I seen him struggling, trying to get so many different things done all by himself. It wasn't until he got on the men's team and the men's team was able to actually, like, steer him in the right direction, give him more support, and, like, just being someone who could relate to youth, that's where I felt like my place it was to step in and to just be a person who could support young men and could support the person who supported me most when I was in high school. So.
And Ashanti is a math teacher who started Ever Way Forward.
Yes.
And is it still on a volunteer basis, or are you getting funding now?
Well, we're kind of getting funding. We do the Taking Off the Mask workshop, and that's a professional development workshop that we ask people to pay a small fee from. Mm-hmm. So the more workshops we do, the more funding we have to sustain our organization. And we're also asking for funding from other organizations.
And to Debbie's point about economics and your point about working at In-N-Out, you work with young men now and boys. What is it like talking to them about jobs? I mean, what kind of jobs are available for young boys and men?
Well, unless you're 16 years old, I don't know if it's 16 or 15 and a half mm-hmm. now, but unless you're 15 and a half or 16, you have to get a work permit. And in order to get a work permit, you have to have at least a 2.0 or maybe it's like a 2.3 GPA. So if you aren't in that range, it's hard for us to tell you things to do to try and get a job or to tell you about the opportunities that are out there, because you have to have the GPA for it. And we reach out to the young men who don't necessarily have the best GPA, because we notice that those young men are the ones who are sometimes dealing with the most. It's like, I know when I was failing, I wasn't failing because I actually didn't understand the work. I was failing because I felt overwhelmed and I just needed a break. Mm. Every time I didn't do work, it was like, okay, something just happened last night or something just happened last week and it just got me in a funk and I don't want to do it.
This is a good point, because when Ashanti was a math teacher, when he was just starting out, he said that half of the Black and Latino boys in his class were failing about half of their classes. He knew they were smart, but societal pressures led them to feel like they couldn't be smart. And you've also said that when you have kids who are acting out in class, it's because there's something happening at home, right? And that's all connected.
Yes. Like, sometimes I think, like, teachers sometimes, don't get me wrong, like, teachers do an amazing job, some of them, but some of them are oftentimes overlook what could be an underlying issue. They just probably see a kid who's always in their class talking or always being disruptive or always just trying to not focus. But when they spend 90% of their time focusing on something that happened to them that caused them pain or caused them some type of negative tension, they can't focus. I remember when I was young, I would literally try and do my work, but my mind would be racing, and I could never focus on what it was I was doing. So I'll just call somebody and be like, all right, let's talk, as opposed to doing something that would be more beneficial to me. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like with teachers, sometimes very few teachers go the extra step and be like, hey, what's going on with you? A lot of them just give the kid a referral and send them to the office. And that causes more of an issue, because it's like, if I'm dealing with just getting in trouble at home, and then I come here and I'm trying to focus and I'm trying to get help from somebody else, but you think I'm just having a conversation or I'm just talking about nothing, and you send me to the office, that's now two times where I've been put in trouble for something that I don't even think is my fault. And now I'm even more upset. So when I go to the office and the principal just sees a referral that has this long paragraph about all this stuff that I don't feel as if I did or I agree with, and you just automatically suspend me or automatically give me a detention without even hearing my side of the story, it causes them to be even more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, deflective.
Right.
So they don't want to talk to you if you're not even going to give them a chance to listen, if that makes sense.
What advice would you give to teachers?
My advice would be to don't necessarily, kind of the same lesson that they teach youth is don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge a book by its cover. Like, there's a whole book with 12 chapters in there in regards to youth. They are only reading the back part, the back introduction that tells you what the book is kind of an overview about, you know? And I just would tell them to just go a little deeper. Ask them what's going on, like what's happening. Why are you acting this way? Don't just say, hey, be quiet, or hey, do your work. Like, always pointing the finger at them, because if they're getting the finger pointed at them anywhere else, you're not going to get the result that you want by just doing the same thing that they're experiencing over and over again.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Debbie. Let's go next to Peter in Berkeley. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. And thank you to your guest for, the courage and commitment to do this work. So important. Thank you. I wanted to let you know about a resource that's available that helps everybody, whether young people or adults, to realize what it takes to get, to give, and to sustain real love and peace. It's an organization called the Star Alliance Foundation for All, and we've created some declarations and pledges and an approach to curriculum called the Vocabulary of Peace. And all of this is available online at staralliance.org. And the idea is the stars are principles. The principles are points of value that are the same for everybody, and they're the same at every level of society, whether it be the intimate family, the school, the city council, the state and the nation and the world. So I think it is a contribution, and it's a real resource. It's 30 years in the making.
Well, thank you so much for that, Peter. We'll take a look at that organization. Thanks for bringing it up. Let's go next to Sean in Oakland. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Good, Peter.
Do we have Sean? No, Sean. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how the you and the young boys and men you work with are influenced by certain things in our culture. Like, say, for example, video games and the music industry. I mean, those are two huge topics. But which one do you all spend more time talking about, the music industry or video games?
Well, me personally, I talk with my youth more about the music industry, because it's more real. Mm. You know, like with games like Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto, like, some students know that they're just playing a game. They could understand that this is just a game, that this will never happen in real life. But when you're listening to the music, And this is a person you can actually see, you could feel, you could touch. If you pay the right price to get to the concert or have backstage passes, you can meet these people. And they're, when they have interviews like how we're having, they talk about how real they are in regards to their lyrics. Like, I'm rapping about what I experience, I'm rapping about what I do, and I'm singing or doing whatever it is that I've actually experienced. So it makes them believe that they could do it. And it causes them to act in those type of ways because it's getting them likes, especially like on social media. Mm. So if I post a famous quote that says, I just killed somebody because it's by some famous rapper, like a lot of people are going to like it because they know the lyric. They know the person. They know what song it is. And they can relate to it. So they get likes. And students feel, or young people feel validation, even adults feel validation from people liking what they post on Instagram or any type of social media.
Right.
So with our youth, that's something that's really big in regards to like how, like, you could follow your favorite rapper on Instagram, and then most of those pictures, you could see them either doing some type of drugs, flashing some type of money, or having some type of guns. So if you're living in an area where it's easily accessible to get a gun, you might want to go do that and listen to your favorite rapper and go try and rob somebody. They're pushing this like hyper masculine narrative, and it's causing students, young men, to go to jail over it because they think like, oh, I'm not going to get caught. Everybody thinks they're not going to get caught until they get caught. And because they see someone who's famous who is saying that they made it out of that situation by doing the same thing, by like, I made it out the ghetto by selling dope. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say things like that. So it gives a young person the idea that they can do the same thing. And if they can't do the same thing, I could just rap about it. So it gives them, like, the idea of success to them is like, I'm going to go to the NBA, NFL, play some type of sport. I'm going to be a famous rapper, or I'm just going to be a thug or a drug dealer.
How do you talk to the young boys you work with about these issues?
I just tell them about my experience. I have a cousin who's in jail right now, and when he went to jail, he was addicted to like heroin and like cocaine, and like this is someone like the guy Terrence who I was telling you about. He was the cousin
who brought you the clothes.
Yes, He's actually in jail right now, and he fell victim to drug addiction. I have another cousin who was in jail for murder. He has 56 years, and it's like, he may not even make it to those 56 years, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, I have multiple cousins who I don't even associate with, who I just know that are my family, who's been in jail since before I was born. And then I have my brother, like, he's not my blood brother, but I was telling you about my dad. My youngest brother's mother had three kids. So her three kids, I consider them my family. And my brother, who was her son, he's in jail right now, and he's been in jail for the past 8 years. So it's like, I have very personal experiences with people who are incarcerated. And it's because they were living a lifestyle that they thought that they wasn't going to get caught, that everybody was idolizing. They just thought it was okay to keep doing. And then you have a conversation with them while they're in there, and it's like, oh, I made a mistake, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I wish you could realize that you were making a mistake before you have to get incarcerated. And that's what I try and talk to them about. It's like, look, you only have one life to live. If you spend 13 years of your life in jail, you didn't really live. You know, you have to wait until you get out, and you have to figure everything out at probably like 30, depending on what time you go to jail. So it's weird because like it's real personal for me because like, me and my cousin was always best friends from that point. Well, we were best friends before, but like after that point where he gave me the clothes, we were like tight, super tight. Like you couldn't see him without me. You couldn't see me without him. And now that the relationship has changed and I try and explain that to them, they think that I'm just bragging to be like, hey, I know somebody in jail. Because like if you listen to the music, everybody who's talking about like the lifestyle that certain people live when they're growing up in Oakland is like, it's free my partner, free my boy, free my brother. And they're saying free them because they're in jail. So they think that I'm just trying to tell them like, hey, I know some gangsters, you know, and I'm trying to like be cool about it. And that's not necessarily the case. I'm trying to give them a fair warning that I'm not untouchable, and you're definitely not untouchable. Like, look at my family. This could easily be your family, you know?
How do they respond to these stories?
It depends on the day.
And I'm sure they have their similar stories.
Yeah, they do. It depends on the day. Sometimes they won't even want to go into detail about their stories, which I know they have. And some days, like, that's what I'm saying, it depends on the day. Because some days they'll think I'm just joking. They'll think I'm just trying to brag. Other days they'll be like, man, that's crazy. And, like, I understand. And I want to relate. I want to reflect on that. I want to talk about that more deeply. And other days they're just like, ha, ha, ha. What's on Instagram right now? So it just depends on the day. And sometimes it depends on the crowd.
And depends on what they're dealing with at home, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much to talk about in terms of poverty and racism and our media culture and masculinity. What are your thoughts on what's most effective in terms of society's role and how, you know, people who care about these issues and want to do something about it, what's most effective?
Being there. Because a lot of these people are, like, really public figures, and they don't actually spend too much time in these areas where they're trying to reach out to the youth. They go have, like, some type of event. They come stand out, wave their hand, and say, hey, I care about you. And then they leave. A lot of them aren't there during doing the work that we're doing. Like, we're there. Like, we're having conversations with parents. We're having conversations with youth. We're, like, we're trying to help them, like, very hands-on. And a lot of people who have the power and the finances to, like, help in a more better way, they aren't doing it. They're just talking about it and not being about it.
What are your thoughts about the media's story about young men of color? When you see yourself in the media, what do you see?
When I see myself in the media, I see potential. But I also see that the media kind of pushes a narrative that we're only one type of way. And that's what I think is kind of wrong, because, like, a lot of people don't want to be classified or put into a box. But I feel like the media kind of puts, like, black people or people of color into a box, like, in regards to, like, when someone gets killed by the police, supposedly, they kind of bring up the fact that he had a record. They bring up the fact that his parents had a record, and they're not really addressing the issue at hand, which is somebody was just murdered, you know? So when I see myself in the media, I kind of see myself in several different ways, because there are some people who are people of color who are being majorly successful or doing things for the community, but they don't get as much shine as the person who just probably murdered someone. It's like, people get killed a lot in Oakland, and you see a lot of news articles or news clips about someone who had just got shot or somebody who had just got robbed or things like that. Mm-hmm. You don't see too many articles about valedictorian of color. You know, you don't see too many, like, articles about this many people of color went to college out of the city. You don't see those type of statistics being put into the media. And if we just had more visual examples of successful black people or successful people of color, I don't want to say black people, I think you will start seeing the narrative change. Because as of now, it's like, let's talk about Kevin Durant. He just messed up his knee. I seen that on 3 different news channels last night. Kevin Durant is a good dude. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I feel his pain. He hurt his knee. Like, that messes with the Warriors. I'm sorry. But for it to be on 3 different news platforms, and no one's talking about the underlying causes of dropouts in Oakland and how to change them, like, that's where I feel as if we have a disconnect. If you can spend more time talking about the Warriors as opposed to talking about how we support our youth, you miss me.
or how what we can do to ensure that Ever Forward Club has the funding that it needs to spread across the country.
Right.
And to support these young men and boys that you're working with.
Because if you don't want to be the face of the organization, at least support the organization if you truly care about what happens with the youth in our community.
You have a goal right now of getting into 10 schools. Mm-hmm. And how's that going?
Well, we're in roughly about 8 that are kind of started. We have Arise High School, which is in Oakland. We have Unity Middle School, which is in Oakland. We have a hybrid club, which is at Claremont Middle School. We're at Reach. That's where I primarily mentor, which is in San Leandro.
And can I ask you, sorry to cut you off, we only have about a minute left.
Oh, don't worry.
I mean, it's so interesting because you have your story and you're still dealing with that, the relationship with your mom, for example, and then you're also mentoring young people. Is there a story that sticks with you that you'd like to share with us before we end? Maybe a mentor, a relationship, or something that changed recently?
Well, it's just that a lot of my students are dealing with a lot of heavy things. And sometimes I think that what I'm doing isn't necessarily good enough. Mm-hmm. But when you have a student who, I'm open with my students. They all know exactly where I live and they can reach me easily. So when a student is having an issue at home and they come to me at my house knocking on the door and they're crying and they trusted me to be that support system for them, it's that's deep.
Wow.
And it's I was asleep. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. I had to be up at 9, but he came knocking on my door and I was oh, okay, hey, all right, let's, the job is still on, you know? And that's what I mean by the hands-on work. A lot of people aren't doing hands-on work to where students feel comfortable enough to come to your house and be hey, I'm dealing with this, can you help me? And you actually be there to help them.
Lorenzo, thank you so much for coming on. This was your first radio interview, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing your story. We got a couple of emails from listeners who said thank you so much for sharing your story and thank you for doing the work you do.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Lorenzo Cooper is program officer with the Ever Forward Club. This is a group that provides workshops and mentoring, providing safe places to look behind the masks that we wear on a daily basis. And you can find out more about this group at yourcallradio.org and also watch videos of Lorenzo and others in the group telling their stories. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you all on again.
Oh, I'm sure we will be, especially when Branch gets back.
Yes, that's Ashanti Branch. He was supposed to be on today, but his flight got delayed on his way back east.
Wish him safe travels.
Yes. Tomorrow on Your Call, it's our media roundtable. We'll be talking about coverage of Donald Trump's sweeping tax cuts, the Republican Party's plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. What is their plan? And we'll talk about calls for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to step down. Your Call is produced here at KALD. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Stephanie Purcell is our intern. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can listen to past shows, sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.